Gerasi was the first consul invested with power before he revoked the laws which excluded the relatives of emigrants and of former nobles from the exercise of political rights and of functions of public office. The law of forced loans was recalled and replaced by an extraordinary levy additional to the regular taxes. Napoleon put an end to the requisitions on terre and established the law of hostages. He recalled the writers condemned to deportation by the law of the 19th Fructidor, year 5, such as Carnot, Portalis, Simeon. He allowed the conventionalists, Barrère and Vatier, to return. He opened the doors of France to more than 100,000 emigrants, among whom were the members of the Constituent Assembly. He caused to be restored to their public offices certain conventionalists whom it had been desired to exclude. He pacified La Vendée. He organized the administration of the municipalities in the city of Lyon, Marseille, and Bordeaux. He expressed himself to the Council of State on one occasion in these words: "To rule by means of a party is to put oneself sooner or later in dependence upon it. I shall not fall into that snare. I am national. I make use of all who have the capacity and the will to march with me. This is the reason why I have composed my Council of State of constituents who were called moderate or feuillants, such as de Fermont, Rodier, Regnier, and Rignon, of royalists, such as de Vent and Dufresne, finally of Jacobins, such as Brune, Riel, and Brulier. I love honest men of all parties, prompt to recompense recent services as well as to illustrate all great souvenirs. Napoleon placed in the Hôtel des Invalides by the side of the statues of Hoche, Joubert, Marceau, de Gaumier, and Dompierre, the statue of Condé, the ashes of Turenne, and the heart of Aubin. He revived at Orléans the memory of Jeanne d'Arc, at Beauvais that of Jeanne Hachette. In 1800, he made the restoration of the great citizen Lafayette an indispensable condition of a treaty. Later, he took his aides-de-camp officers, Drouot, Lobau, Bernard, who had been opposed to the consulate for life, and he treated with the same benevolent senators who had voted against the establishment of the empire, always faithful to the principles of conciliation. The emperor, in the course of his reign, granted a pension to the sister of Robespierre, as he did to the mother of the Duke of Orléans. He consoled and assisted in her misfortunes the widow Vailly, president of the Constituent Assembly, and supported in her old age the last descendant of Duguesclin. To reunite all the national forces against the enemy, to reorganize the country upon principles of equality, order, and justice. This was the task of Napoleon. He found under his hand many elements full of antipathy, and according to his own expression, instead of extirpating them, he united them by amalgamation. Divisions existed not only in political parties, but also in other bodies of the nation. The clergy was divided between the old and the new bishops, the high and the low church, priests sworn partisans of the revolution, and refractory priests. These last were the favorite children of the Pope, profiting by the influence which the protection of the head of the religion gave them. They perverted minds through writings printed abroad, which they scattered over the country. The emperor, by his concordat, removed the leader of this misguided flock and brought back to clergy two ideas of concord and submission. The Republic of Letters was divided between the Institute and the old Academy. He merged the members of the Academy in the Institute, and the savants lived in peace, uniting their intelligence to illuminate the nation and hasten the progress of science. There existed ancient names, to some of which were annexed souvenirs of glory, and titles whose influence was not entirely extinct. Napoleon reconciled ancient and new France by mingling with the inherited titles, new titles acquired by meritorious services. The Jews formed a nation within the nation. Some of their dogmas were contrary to the French civil laws. The emperor caused to be convoked the Grand Sanhedrin, which, in concert with the imperial commissioners, reformed those political regulations regulations of the law of Moses, which were susceptible of modification, and the Jews became citizens. The barriers which separated them from the rest of the nation gradually disappeared, especially let us not overlook the fact that all which Napoleon undertook and accomplished in order to effect a general fusion was done without renouncing the principles of the revolution. He recalled emigrants without touching the principle of the irrevocability of the sale of the national property. He established the Catholic religion at the same time that he proclaimed liberty of conscience and gave equal pecuniary assistance to the ministers of every form of worship. He caused himself to be consecrated by the sovereign pontiff without subscribing to any of the concessions trenching upon the liberties of the Gallican Church, which the Pope demanded. He espoused the daughter of the Emperor of Austria without surrendering any of the rights of France to the conquests which he had made. He established titles of nobility, but without annexing to them privileges or prerogatives. These titles were open to all classes, all services, and all professions. Under the empire, all idea of caste was destroyed. No one pretended to boast of his parchments. It was asked what one had done, not what was his birth. The first quality of a people that aspires to a free government is respect for the law. Now a law possesses no force except in the interest which each citizen has to respect or to break it. In order to engraft in the people respect for the law, it was necessary that the law should be executed for the common good, and that it should consecrate the principle of equality in all of its extent. It was necessary to revive the prestige of authority and to plant deep in the manners and customs the principles of the revolution. For manners and customs are the sanctuary of institutions. At the birth of a new society, the legislator makes the manners and customs and corrects them, while at a later period, the manners and customs make the laws or preserve them from age to age. When institutions are in harmony, not only with the interests, but still more with the sympathies and the habits of a people, then is formed that public and national spirit which forms the strength of a country, because it serves as a bulwark against every encroachment of power and every attack of parties. There is in every nation, says Montesquieu, a general public spirit upon which power itself is founded. When it shocks that public spirit, that shock is communicated to itself, and it necessarily comes to a standstill.